Welcome to the Poultry Leadership Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Wolnix. And on today's show, I hope to get to the bottom of the question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Our guest for today is Steve Welsh with Hendrix Genetics, and he's been around the poultry industry for quite a while, and maybe he has the answer. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Good afternoon, Brandon, and thanks for having me.
So, any suggestions on which came first?
Isn't that the age-old question of which one came first? And I guess you can't have an egg without a chicken, but you can't have a chicken without an egg either. So from my standpoint, I think the chicken came first, but I think that's still to be determined.
All right. Well, maybe a different guest, a different time, we'll be able to answer that question. But Steve, tell us about who you are and your family and all that fun stuff to help connect with the listeners.
Okay, so my name is Steve Welch. I've been in the industry for about 30 years now, something like that. I started in 1993. And to be honest with you, when I started the industry, I had no poultry background whatsoever. I've been through a couple different genetics companies. Our largest competitor I was with for about 18 years over at Highline, started on their research farm and kind of worked my way through there and left there in 2011. Did a couple other gigs with Hogs Flat, Georgia Poultry, selling equipment, which was great. A lot of great experience for the 3 years I spent there. And then I realized I missed live poultry. So I had an opportunity to come in as a salesperson for Centurion Poultry, who sold a couple of Hendrix's breeds at that time, and worked with them for a short amount of time until Hendrix ESA really started here in the U.S. So, but yeah, that's kind of the background, quick background there. I live in Iowa, not too far from Des Moines, a little town called Perry, which unfortunately everybody has probably heard about over the last couple months with unfortunate things that have happened here. But anyway, so I have a wonderful wife and two amazing kids that have been my worlds from the day that they were born. My son was born in 97 and really kind of sparked a big change in me that has led to kind of where I'm at today.
Very exciting. Hendrix Genetics, tell us a little bit about what you do for Hendrix Genetics and who they are.
Yeah, so I am currently the director of sales and marketing for Hendrix ESA here in the U.S. So it's Hendrix ESA LLC, which is really the distribution arm in the U.S. for Hendrix Genetics per layer. So Hendrix Genetics is a multi-species animal protein breeding and genetic and technology company based out of Boxmeer, Netherlands. And of course, we are all, like most people in the industry, passionate about animals and, of course, us animal breeding. So, like I said, we are multi-species. So we have breeding programs, mainly in laying hens, turkeys, traditional poultry, swine, salmon, shrimp, and trout. We are one of two of the largest animal protein companies, really, in the world. Like I said, our largest competitor would be the EW group that Highline International falls underneath of as well. We, I think our two companies make up somewhere around 90% of the layered genetics in the world, somewhere around there. So we've been around for a long time. We have about 100 years worth of genetics in our program, and really kind of how, I guess I'll transition to where we've been. Hendrix has been around for a long time, started off, but as we know, Hendrix Genetics today really started somewhere around, I believe, and don't quote me on this, somewhere between 2000, 2005. And they started building this distribution in 2015 when I started. It was the very beginning of distribution, direct distribution underneath Hendrix Genetics. So before that, we had a few different distributors. Centurion Poultry was one of those that I mentioned. And we still have a couple distributors in the U.S., we are just the main branch directly off of Hendrix Genetics. So we would be comparative for anybody else listening, because they probably know this quite well. We would be comparative to Highline North America as a distributor for Highline. So we're the same on the Hendrix.
Wow, I learned something new there. The fact that, you know, we have a poultry genetics company that also works with trout and shrimp. And that is, I guess, that makes sense. Genetics are genetics, whether, you know, cross species in certain, so many different ways. That's incredible. I guess trying to make genetics for a good shrimp cocktail, that's not your specialty, but it definitely is in the Hendrix line. That's pretty cool.
You know, it's one of the things, Brandon, to be honest with you, when I came over to Hendrix in 2015, it was really kind of that full passionate about animal breeding and the variety of species that we actually had here at Hendrix that kind of drove me in this direction. You know, when I started with Hendrix, we were just starting to build a new hatchery out in Nebraska, and I took over as project management out there, getting that started, getting some of our cooperator barns building. And then I did that for not quite a year. And then we transferred that responsibility, right, as we were pouring concrete for the hatchery to another gentleman. And I moved into the planning department and took over planning and did that for a couple of years and then had an opportunity to go into sales. I've always said I'm a production guy. I'm not a sales guy. I am a horrible sales guy. I'll tell everybody that. But I am passionate about production and passionate about customers. So, you know, there was just this great opportunity to see a company grow within the U.S. and really compete in the U.S. on a larger scale. I wanted to be part of that. And I knew we had a lot of backing with the size of the so.
Well, Steve, you have a great personality for fitting in with all of those other salesmen that are in the industry. So you camouflage yourself pretty well there.
A lot of great people in this industry. No
doubt. Oh. Absolutely. Steve, pretend I'm a new customer just getting started with a farm. Can you share the basics of genetics and why is it important to me as a customer?
Really, when we look at genetics, we're looking at breeding performance and we look at multifaceted, right? So we're looking not only at the long-term performance of that bird, we look at sustainability, innovativeness, and we look at multiple traits within each one of those birds and improved traits. So we're trying to get the most value out of that bird out of that species with the most sustainable program that we can, right? So when you're looking at genetics, we're trying to improve eggshell, livability, life of flock, persistency of lay. You're looking at how early a bird can lay, how many eggs, feed consumption. And those are all kind of the main traits that we've always looked at over the years. Like those are ongoing traits that all of us are trying to improve and get the best genetic material, right? We're trying to get that best bird. But there are a number of factors these days that we look at that we wouldn't normally have looked at in the past. And a lot of that's environmental. So now with more animal welfare challenges out there, with cage and cage-free, no beak treatment, male calling, we are now implementing some of those traits within our genetic and how can we influence birds, and in particular for us, layers, in each one of those traits to make sure she can perform under each one of those conditions.
I mean, starting a farm today is, if I'm hearing you right, you guys get to take all of the history and all the knowledge and get that bird to just be at top performance, be sustainable. And as a farmer starting today, I get to take advantage of that. I don't have to go back to ground zero and buy and get the first bird off the ark, so to speak, and say, hey, I've got to produce, you know, cage-free eggs out of you, and your species just happened to be caged for the last 50. Is that, if I'm understanding you right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we are at the start of the chain, and because of that, we have an influence on the outcome. So yeah, you don't have to put the time and effort. That's what we do, right? So there is, I mean, there's no doubt there are things that we can create this genetically perfect bird or what we believe to be as perfect as possible. But there are environmental factors. There are management practices that can interrupt exactly what we're trying to accomplish. So if you follow some of the recommendations that are put out, but we have to keep in mind that all of those management practices can sway the outcome. And that's why we have, you know, depending on when we look at genetics too, we're really trying to develop a bird for the industry, but really for a region as well. So we look at all the different varieties of birds or breeds of birds that we have. And, you know, whether it's a North America bird or a US bird or a bird in Mexico, we want to make sure those birds perform. And there are some birds that will perform better in those areas than other areas. So we do look at it from a very, very logistic approach of we need a bird that fits this market. What can we do genetically to make sure that she fits? Because, You know, here in the U.S., we're always looking for a large egg. That's our goal. That's one of our top goals, that we produce as many large eggs as possible. But that is not the same for every country. There are countries that enjoy medium eggs, or, you know, the U.S. is a white egg market, and you've got other countries that are brown egg market. So it's really concentrating on where we can drive those genetics and support each one of those regions.
All right, listeners, if you didn't get something out of that, then I might as well just tune off this podcast, because I got a lot out of that. You know, I think of, you know, where the farms are just in the U.S., and I'm assuming the latitude and the environment just within the U.S. changes quite a bit. And you've got to have some pretty good specifics around that and what feeds available for them. Thank you, Steve. Thank you a lot. So, Steve, what's some of the biggest breakthrough in genetics recently, last 5-10 years?
Really, for us, one of the largest is this persistency out to 100 weeks in a single cycle without molting. So that really has been our push for at least the last 10 years, if not even a little bit longer than that. Really, that's really one of the biggest pushes. And we're there. So we are looking at 500 eggs per bird at 100 weeks. It happens consistently. There are areas, again, where we don't see that consistently. One, either because of the economics of the country that we're in, just people not used to, you know, we're a molted market, or we were a molting market here in the U.S. So all birds were kind of not forced, but we have this molting aspect, and not a lot of people that are going to a single cycle out to 90 plus weeks. We see that now more than we did 10 years ago. And I think our average, when I started looking at some of our birds, where we're at on average, we're about 93 weeks of age. There are some people that are holding them out to 100 weeks here, but it's still not as common here as it is, say, in Europe.
Sounds like a great efficiency and sustainability if you can get a bird that can not need to be molted to go that far and produce that kind of quality of egg. That's really cool. So a question that I have, and this is, you know, with HPAI being topic of seems like every newsletter, every e-blast, everything that, you know, the industry's talking about, are there ways to combat HPAI with genetics?
To be honest, I don't know if I can answer that question, Brandon. I'm not for sure. There are a lot of things we can do in genetics. You know, we look at the genome and in DNA, and we make selections based off of that. We currently don't do any GMO within the layer industry. We don't do any GMO products. It's all selective breeding based off of traits and DNA traits. So I don't know. You would really have to talk to a geneticist, a real geneticist, about whether we can do anything on HPAI. We do talk about virus resistance and can we create birds that are more resistant. We do see between different breeds that it looks like some of our birds or some birds are more resistant against diseases or viruses than other birds. They at least handle it better. Maybe they're a little more robust than others. But whether we can actually create a bird that is not susceptible to HPAI, I can't answer.
Well, I appreciate your honesty on that one. It's always interesting as you travel around and go to the different conferences and technology summits. It's one of those topics. It's, can we breed it out of the birds or make them more resilient? Or then you get into the whole vaccine world of, can we treat it out of them, so to speak, as well.
Let me go back with just one thing. You know, you were asking about some of the last 5 years, some of the traits or some of the breakthroughs that we've seen. And I really want to kind of play on what we've done over the last 40, 50 years and the progress that's been made by all the genetic companies. And so if you look at egg production on its own, and I think you can go back to about 1960, let's just say 1960 or so, eggs are hen housed. There were about 230 eggs per hen housed back in 1960.
Wow.
And I know today, if you look at just 2010, by 2010, we were up to 378. So we can make a lot of progress. So who knows from today what we'll see in 10 years, 20 years. And we see really kind of a quicker progress today than what we did, than what we saw back in 1960. So, and I'm not exactly for sure how much quicker that progress is. Like, I can't define that for you. A geneticist can, but really the speed is... You can see that just as innovative as all the companies are, even when you're looking at electronics, look at how quickly on electronics we've improved over the years, and that just continues to speed up. We see the same things on genetics. But really, the problem with genetics is this balanced program, right? Like, so it is slower. I think we're somewhere between a 2 and a 3% increase year over year on genetics is what we see, 2 to 3% improvement. But we have to make sure that's a really maintained balanced program. We do know in genetics, if you change one thing on one side, you make an improvement here, you have the opposite effect on another. So it's trying to figure out what traits are those that we're affecting. And that's why it's a lot more about a slower balanced program when we're looking at, especially when we're looking at our birds, because we don't want to interrupt any of those traits. So we can make a quick change, say on egg size, we could concentrate just on egg size. But if we did that and we lose sight of, say, feed consumption, we could destroy our feed consumption here in the U.S. So we can't do that. We know where we need to be. So it is it's slow as far in that aspect.
And you mentioned that 500, that number 500 is, and that's the goal. That's the golden egg goal. Is that what you're saying?
Well, so it was for us 100. So 500 egg at 100 week single cycle. That was kind of Hendrix's goal, and we've reached that. Like I said, we have a 500 egg club. I'm not for sure how many companies are now in that. In the U.S., we know there are two companies that have hit that 500 eggs at 100 weeks. In Europe, there are a lot more, and we continue to see the increase in the number of companies that reach out 500 egg milestone. What is really amazing to me is we know that there are birds in our current pedigree programs that lay an egg a day. And you can't get much better than that until we go to 2 eggs a day. Maybe that's the next dream, but really it's an egg a day. And I think if you would have asked anybody, even when I came in the industry in 93, will we ever get to an egg a day? I think everybody had hoped that, but how realistic was that going to be? And it's realized today.
Well, when you can make a square or rectangular egg, then egg counting will be perfected, I believe. And packaging might be even better because you don't have to worry about them rolling around so much. But you work on that, Steve.
Okay. I don't know if the industry wants that.
I don't know if the industry wants that either, but we always laugh when it comes to the egg counting topic. It's when you have them rolling around on the belts and you're like, well, that's what they do. They roll. I mean, they're going to go forward, backwards, whatever way they want to. Gravity's effective.
Yeah. And then one of the other big things for the industry, you know, over the last couple of years is, and for us, which is a huge concern around the globe, is the male calling of day-old chicks. And all of our companies are working on that. There are definitely technologies that can do that, whether it's commercially viable on a big scale like it is in, like that for the U.S. market, that's still questionable. I think there's some markets for that. We will get there for sure. There's no doubt we'll get to the point where we don't have to worry about male calling. We'll be able to identify them in the shell prior to setting eggs. But I mean, that's really, I know that's not necessarily a genetic solution. We are looking at genetic solutions for sure. Will that come to fruition? I believe at some point in time that there'll be a genetic solution there. How that looks is yet to be determined.
Yeah, that's definitely a hot topic that I've, you know, started recently being introduced to as the technology summits have happened, you know, all the technology around it. But it's a sustainability plan. It works well with the, you know, animal rights folks as well. Kudos to you guys for continuing to work on that as well. All right. As someone who's been around the industry for a while, you're just getting started 30 years in, what advice would you have for people just getting started, whether that's a college grad, a vendor, or someone that just got promoted into a management position?
I don't know if any of my advice is good advice, Brandon. So let me give you a little background. So, and maybe this will help somebody out. You know, I look at it from a very simplistic point of view. I'm a production guy. But I'll be honest, I do not have a college education. So back before I started, right after high school, in fact, in my younger days, I was a bit of a handful. And most of my coworkers, in fact, most people that know me know that I think my family and friends at that time when I was young, 15, 16 years old, didn't think I would probably live to be past 18 or even maybe 20 years old at about the most. And here I am 51 years old, and I've been able to surpass everything I think everybody ever thought about me. So I was a little rambunctious back in the day. I really didn't know what I wanted to, and decided at one point in time, as I was building vending machines, that I was going to get into electrical engineering. That was my goal. And started school for that early on, and as I still worked. And I really, so I left that position of building vending machines to start in the poultry industry at Highline on their research farm without having a lick of experience in poultry. So I worked there as I went to school and ended up dropping out of school, realizing that maybe electrical engineering was not my thing. And I met a really great geneticist at Highline named Neil O'Sullivan. And Neil, for this young kid to come into to a farm that's never had any experience with poultry, really kind of took me under his wing. And I really wanted to learn. It was interesting to me, really wanted to learn. And he was great. He would tell me anything I wanted to know, for the most part. I mean, as long as I asked the questions, he was there. And so as I moved my way through that company, I looked at mentors within that company and leaders within that company that would support that. It was so interesting to me, everything that we were doing and everything that could be done with poultry. I wanted to know everything. So my first thing is, be enthusiastic about what you're doing, regardless of what it is. I think that's one of the things that kind of set me off early, not just in the poultry industry, but even early on in my working career. I've always been kind of enthusiastic and want to learn what else is there. Like, give me everything. So as you're starting off, be enthusiastic. Second thing, look for a great mentor. Look for somebody that will support you and lead you in the right direction. So I said, I left the research farm. I moved into production and I worked on a flock service crew, which does not sound like, a glamorous job, but I loved it because I got to handle a lot of birds. And, I got so good, I could pick out one breed versus another breed just by characteristics and handling that bird. And there's a lot of people in the industry that can do that. I learned a lot about different blood types and how to differentiate on blood typing. And I was allowed to learn as much as I wanted to. And then I had the support from those people. And really, I'm going to name those people too, because they were vital to where I'm at today. So when I moved into production, of course, I got to know Dennis Casey, who was the president at the time, who supported me. There wasn't as much direct contact with Dennis, but he was always willing to talk to me. And then the two other guys were a guy named Travis Slusher. I guess there's three guys: Dave Marsh, Travis Slusher, and Tom Lohr. And if it wasn't for those guys, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. But those guys pushed me, and they allowed me to work everywhere, and I did everything. I drove truck. I worked on flock service. I worked in a hatchery. I worked on egg processing. I worked in the lab for a very short amount of time. And they just allowed me to do a lot of things with no guarantee. There was no guarantees. There was no true management training. So it wasn't management training. It was just I was looking at other opportunities, talked about leaving there at one point in time. And they said, listen, we don't want you to leave. What do you want to do? We'll let you learn whatever you want. And so I just traveled around the company and learned a ton and met a lot of amazing people. So enthusiastic, mentor, and don't be afraid to learn. Like, if it's not your job, don't say it's not your job. Make it your job. Like, one thing I hated, and really I had these people that, the coworkers that would say stuff to me, and they're like, why are you doing that? That's not your job. Well, because I want to know it. I want to know. I may not ever do that again, but I want to know what you do and how you do it. I know it's not my job, but I'm going to make it my job today because I can. So don't be afraid to look at different opportunity. And then one of the other things is, don't necessarily listen to your coworker. And this is what I'm going to say. So as you move through the chain, and a lot of people see this, and I saw this not just for myself, but for a number of other leaders within our industry, you become friends with your coworkers. And at some point, as you're kind of developing through the company, some of those people may not be developing just because they're stuck at what they're doing or don't want to develop. Whatever it is, that's fine. But there's resentment that can come, and people question your reasoning, and now you're becoming this, lack of a better term, a suck up or a kiss up, and you're getting favored now. Ignore that. Ignore that. If people can't uplift you, then find people that can and will uplift you. Don't listen to those negative aspects of oh, you know, you're going to forget where you came from. Just work your way through it, man. That's it. So for any newcomer, those early stages are really what kind of pushed me through this industry. And I've had great opportunities because of that. And I keep looking for those people that can support me, that will support my vision of where I want to go. I want to be successful. And being successful, I redefine probably every day. And at some point I may just say, you know, I'm good here. This is where I'm fine with where I'm at. But I know today I still want to move forward, and I'll redefine what that success looks like tomorrow.
That is incredible advice. Listeners, if you didn't know Steve's story because he didn't share it with you that he wasn't a college grad, man, he's got the School of Hard Knocks. He's definitely got a master's degree in how to navigate through work, how to navigate through working with others, and also some of the most important things out there, and that's enthusiastic curiosity. Never, never saying it's not your job, because that might be the moment it does become your job. And to be curious and to learn, that's all really cool stuff. So thank you, Steve. That was great advice. Leaders oftentimes are people that have overcome something hard in their life. What is one of the hardest things that you've overcome?
Ooh, I guess there's a there's a number of things that I could pick out, but I've never really been shy about what I've been through in my life, because I've always wanted people to maybe not have to go through what I've went through. And people have had it a whole lot harder than me. Let me get that out there first. I mean, I do not have this rags to riches story, but I've had some tough times in my life, no doubt about it. And there are a number of things. You know, when I was 16 years old, I went to a drug treatment program for almost a year, which really kind of set this whole thing off for me. After I got sober in that program, came back to Perry, finished up my last couple of years of high school. I had some great mentors there while I was in that program. But I will admit, I wasn't done having fun. And there were things, you know, the next 2 years still that I did. I stayed away from drugs, though, which was always a good thing. So, but I was still rambunctious, no doubt about it. And I didn't really think highly of myself. So I guess that's kind of the biggest thing is getting over that, you know, I'm never going to be anybody. You know, after treatment, I looked at the friends that I was hanging out with and the people that I was running around with and what I was really doing with myself, and just realized I wasn't doing much. I needed to do something with my life. I didn't want to be this burnout, this guy that, you know, lived with his parents all of his life and didn't really accomplish anything. So my mindset, I think early on, was one of those biggest things. And what really excelled me after that, of course, I put some years in, but when 97 came and we had my son, and it almost didn't happen. We'll just go with that. It almost didn't happen. We couldn't be happier that he is here today with us. But I saw his face when he was born. I was there when he was born, and it all clicked that I have to do better for him. And it was. I mean, it was a start of something great. The way I looked at myself, I knew I had to be somebody for him to look up to. And so I started down this great journey to prove to him that I could be a good dad, and that he could follow in somebody's footsteps if needed. And then we have my daughter, you know, 4 years later. If anybody out there that's ever had a daughter knows how quickly they can wrap their daddies around their fingers. So they have been, you know, just getting to that point that I have this amazing family, I have this amazing wife who has stuck through with me over the years when she shouldn't have. I should probably be alone, but she is this amazing woman that I've got to spend 30 years with now, which is crazy. I think she's been with me that long. But it's all that mindset that I can be something better than what I am today.
Steve, thank you for sharing that story of the things you've overcome. I mean, I would have, you know, you put the disclaimer on it. You're not bigger, better than anybody else. And that's just your humbleness coming through here, buddy. But dude, if you would have been back to your 16-year-old self and looked at yourself today, like if I put you in some sort of time machine and could take you back, do you regret that time period, or is this something that you grew from?
You know, I've been asked that a lot, and there are things that I did that I wished I wouldn't have. Do I regret it? I don't know. I learned a lot. I learned a lot from it. So I don't know if I'd really want to change it now, knowing what I know today, would I want to change it? Because, yeah, I put myself in some positions that that I know other people haven't had the chance to experience. And I learned a lot. I think I became, you know, streetwise, lack of a better term. And I don't know if I'd be there today.
Well, you can't have a testimony without a number of tests in your life, and you've overcome, you've passed those tests for sure. So
there's always tests to come.
Oh yeah. Life, it's just, you're now more wise and a little less probably reactive to those tests and emotional to those tests. You're able to say, hey, I've survived this. This shouldn't be that much that difficult. And they're real. I mean, none of us have perfect lives. We just keep striving for that next level and those next opportunities. And with it, there's going to be bad stuff happening. We all have people in our lives that are going to pass away one day, and we got to worry about that. You turn the corner and you tear a knee up. It's not hard to do that. And as you get older in life, there's so many things that you're going to have, but yeah, just sharing your story is going to help somebody in this industry, because you're not alone. I've met so many guys and gals in our industry that what amazed me was the level of education isn't there. They just didn't go to college, or they barely passed high school. So as I share, you know, struggles of raising a boy in today's world, they're like, dude, just be patient. And so there's many folks in our industry that are going to grasp at your story and say, hey, you know what? Steve's real. He survived. He's successful, even though that success is redefining itself every day, which is awesome. So we have to do. So that's really cool. So Steve, as you look forward 24, 25, you know, a future, what excites you?
Well, I guess the first thing, since we're talking about poultry, really the growth of our company here in the U.S., you know, we've come a long ways in the short amount of time that we've been here. It hasn't even been 10 years yet. 10 years next year, actually, from where our distribution started in the U.S. and where we're currently at. So that excites me every day. And my team knows that. The people I work with, our entire company knows that. And I can't wait to get to the next step. We define that step every year, but I know in 2015 what the idea was, and we're still reaching for that goal. We have a plan for that. And so as far as work goes, it's the growth of our company over the next few years and getting to where we want to be. Personally, at some point, hopefully having some grandchildren. So if my children ever listen to this, they need to get busy. No, but really, that does excite me. I never thought I'd be excited about getting old. I don't know if anybody is ever excited about that. But I'm excited that there's an opportunity to have grandchildren sometime in the future. So
I'm not even going to bring up those words, because I still have a daughter at home and a son at home. So I don't even want to talk about that. So
yeah, sorry. So there's one thing, you know, I was thinking about as you were talking there, and we were talking about my experience and college and stuff. And there is one thing, especially for anybody that would be listening kind of on a higher scale, management scale, ownership scale. There was a time period in this industry. I remember this huge push, and I have nothing against college, man. We told my kids they have to go to college, and they went, and they're doing amazing, so I will support college at any given time. But I do want to say college isn't for everybody. There are a lot of amazing people out there, and they really just need an opportunity to shine. And I think that sometimes we put, like I said, I don't want to say college isn't important, but I think there's times we put too much emphasis on needing a college degree for some of the positions within this industry. And I don't think that's necessary. Companies that look internally into their own people, I admire, because we don't always get that. Now, this industry has been great. There's no doubt about that. Like you said, they've supported me, and I've seen a lot of people grow in this industry without having that background. But it is one of those things. I don't hear it as much today as I did a few years ago. But really, man, look at those bright stars that you have. even though they don't have the education.
Degrees don't matter when it comes to getting to know your people and what challenges them, what the spark that makes them go, because you could find that in somebody and they'll grow on their own if they get that spark or that confidence or have that mentor in their life, as you mentioned earlier. Great piece of wisdom. So is there anything else that I didn't ask you that you want to share with our audience today?
I don't know. There's a lot of things, but where do we go, Brandon, from here? Our customers are just the people in this industry in whole are great people. It's a great industry to be a part of. I am proud to be a part of it. You know, the people ask what I do, and I get excited. I think my wife gets tired of hearing the same thing, but I get excited about being able to explain the industry and what I do. But I normally start that conversation off with, I sell chickens. And it's amazing, hours and hours of conversations that I've had from that simple statement and explaining what we do. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I love the people in this industry. You know, we have some of the greatest customers ever. We have some of the greatest people ever, always being innovative and thinking forward. So I'm excited every morning that I wake up.
Oh, I can tell. I've been around you at these events, and you are energy when you're around folks. And that's probably what created my need to reach out to you and say, hey, dude, I got to get you on this show because you're full of it in a good way.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was reluctant about doing the show, Brandon. You know, for a myriad of reasons, I'm not always the best speaker. I'm not a great public speaker at all. But this show, so I've listened to your podcast, really brings a new light to the industry. I want to thank you for putting this show together, having some of the people on that you have. I don't know if I've done any justice to your show at all, or to even to our company, but I do think your show has been great. I look forward to every week to seeing something new come out from you and from the speakers, great leaders in this industry.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that. I mean, this show would not be possible without folks like yourself, willing to share your story, willing to share your leadership journey, willing to share some insight so that the next generation of leaders are going to come up with a resource, because you can't learn this stuff at college. I mean, the stuff at college isn't going to teach you about what the behind the scenes of the industry are, what the terms in the industry are. It's going to introduce you to birds. It's going to introduce you to business. It's going to introduce you to technology. But this podcast is all about allowing somebody at the farm to just catch up with the market in terms of terminology and issues and associations and all the things that go around that you don't get typically without getting outside your comfort zone and listening to a podcast. I don't know of any YouTube channels right now that are doing this. I don't know anything else that's doing that. But I just appreciate Steve. I appreciate you and the listeners for the feedback that you guys have been giving me here lately. It just means a lot that I'm able to share these stories from across the industry. And with that, I'm going to end today's show by also thanking Prism Controls. I say it every week. Prism Controls is here. They make this show possible by allowing me time, allowing me a place, and allowing me the support necessary and the access to the people that really make this industry wonderful. So please do Steve and I a favor, share this podcast with your friends, share this podcast with a growing leader in the industry, like it, rate it on iTunes, rate it on all the different platforms that you can, because that helps others find it. If someone's at their farm and they're looking for this podcast, we want them to find this show. And it's now hit, like, I don't know, 17, 18 countries. I don't even speak the languages in those countries, and people are still listening to us. So really appreciate you, listeners. Thank you again, Steve, for being here. And just everyone, have a great day.